Washington Post journalist Barton Gellman is the author of the new book, Angler, the Cheney Vice Presidency. In the second part of an interview, we asked him to discuss the infamous night in which Alberto Gonzalez and Andy Carr went to visit an ailing Attorney General John Ashcroft to get him to sign off on the controversial domestic surveillance action.
This story is even more extraordinary than we thought. I didn't expect to do this, but I spent two whole chapters on this narrative of what led up to and after the hospital visit. And for the first time, James Comey, the deputy and then acting attorney general, speaks on the record. Andy Card, Condi Rice, Dan Bartlett, and a whole host of the other major players in this speak on the record in the book. And I go sort of hour by hour through the key parts of it. But the extraordinary thing is that the Justice Department came to believe that this domestic surveillance program was illegal in December of 2003. And for 3 months, Dick Cheney tried to sort of suppress this legal rebellion. And during those 3 months, George Bush didn't know. And George Bush didn't find out until the day before the program was going to expire that justice would not certify it. And it was that night that Andy Card and Al Gonzalez are sent to the hospital to try to get Ashcroft to sign because Comey won't. And what happens after that is really a historic moment in the presidency. The president finds out at the last moment, I mean 1 hour before it was going to happen, that he was about to lose 24 of his top appointees at Justice and the FBI, including the guys at the very top of both organizations. And he absolutely reverses himself. He does a complete about-face from the policy that Cheney has been pushing for 3 months. And according to Dan Bartlett, who was senior White House political advisor, he saved his presidency.
It's incredible. Let's talk about the Iraq War, which, of course, dominates so much of this administration. And you have some interesting news regarding former Texas Congressman Dick Armey, who some of our listeners will remember was actually one of the few Republicans who was openly in the summer of 2002 discussing maybe we should or should not actually go into Iraq when the drum roll was going hard to invade Iraq. You have a story in your book regarding a visit that Dick Cheney had with Congressman Dick Armey to convince him to vote for the resolution to authorize going into Iraq. Tell our listeners about that, Barton Gellman.
Well, Dick Armey was not just any Republican, obviously. As you know, he was very conservative from the president's home state of Texas, and he was the majority leader of the Republican Party in the House. And in August 2002, he came out in public and said, I'm against this war. It should not happen. George Bush takes him to Camp David to try to change his mind. He sets up special briefings to change his mind. Nothing's working. So Armey becomes Cheney's project. Cheney has a one-on-one briefing with him, which has never been told before, and tells Armey two things that are just entirely detached from the world of reality and intelligence at the time. He claims that Saddam has personal family ties to al-Qaeda and that Saddam is close to acquiring miniaturized nuclear weapons, that is, suitcase nukes, which can then be given to his friends in al-Qaeda. And Armey told me, using sort of the full, colorful language of a Texan, that he believes that Cheney BS'd him and that he lied to him. And it changed Army's vote. Armey was actually weeping in the well of the House when he cast his vote in favor of the war. And he says if he knew then what he knew now, he never would have done it.
Incredible. Now, we're, of course, in the waning months of the administration. And so, obviously, the Bush administration is, as we've seen here with this financial crisis, maybe doesn't have as much influence as it ever did in its two terms. But what about Dick Cheney? In the second term, is it fair to say that he lost some of his power with the ascendancy of Condi Rice at State and Gates at Defense? Or tell us about how the second term has evolved with the Cheney vice presidency.
Well, it is true that Cheney has there's a sort of trajectory described in the book in which he has these very powerful, productive years in the first term where he really changes the course of history. And he is far from powerless in the second term, but he is on the wane. George Bush became more confident, more reliant on his own instincts, more experienced, and he saw a couple of times, especially with that Justice Department meltdown, that Cheney had the capability to drive him right off a cliff if he wasn't watched. And at the same time, there were more powerful adversaries who emerged. You know, Cheney lost some of his closest people, Scooter Libya's chief of staff. He lost Don Rumsfeld over at defense. And the new defense secretary was more inclined to disagree. The new White House chief of staff, Josh Bolton, spoke to me on the record and said that he intended to take back some of the powers that Cheney had taken for himself. The Treasury secretary, George Bush's fourth, died in there now. Paulson is a much more powerful figure than the ones before, and so Cheney doesn't dominate economic policy as much as he did either.
A theme of anger seems to me, and it's been like this since most of the second term, that is, of course, with Dick Cheney's poll numbers lower than 20%. But this goes from the very get-go of your book and of the Cheney taking over in 2000. That is, the man is impervious to criticism, as opposed to most any other human being I can tell, in terms of not worrying about what people say or think about him. How does that, you're no psychologist, but why do you think he's been like that?
Well, you have to realize how much power it gives you if you just don't care what anyone thinks or what anyone says. And it is extraordinarily rare for a politician to be indifferent to public opinion. He's almost an anti-politician. Why he believes that? I mean, look, he has been expedient in his use of power. He's been willing to say that ends justify means, but his ends he's very upfront about. He believes the country is gravely at threat, that he understands better than other people what needs to be done about it, and that the public opinion doesn't really understand, doesn't really get it. And so he feels that history will be his only judge, and he just needs to, go straight ahead, unveering, towards the objective that's required.